Thanks for tuning into Mysteries of the Mind, a podcast revealing the way our unconscious minds shape our lives. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Bader.
Today, I want to talk about empathy. Now, sympathy and empathy are different. Sympathy is when you understand that someone else is suffering. Empathy is when you also feel that person's suffering. Empathy is hardwired. And it begins in the mirroring that goes on between an infant and a caretaker, the playful imitation through facial expressions and gestures, through mutual cooing and mimicking each other's emotional states. The capacity for empathy is innate, and it's grounded in neurobiological processes and brain chemicals such as oxytocin and endogenous opiates. It makes use of what are called mirror neurons. But this is important now. Healthy empathy doesn't just mean feeling like another person or identifying completely with another person. As the infant matures, he or she develops the capacity also to differentiate self from other, thereby grasping the crucial fact that one's own thoughts and feelings are not necessarily shared by everyone else. Feeling and seeing the world from another's perspective, while appreciating that others may be different and unique as you, are the two components of mature empathy. As is so often true in psychological development, if we receive empathy, if we get empathy, our capacity to then feel it and express it with others grows. In other words, we become social beings. The empathy we experience from our most important caretakers makes us feel safe and better able to develop our cognitive abilities and even our moral sensibilities. Healthy parental empathy makes a child feel safe and able to develop self-esteem and autonomy. But what happens when all this breaks down? Human beings who are deprived of empathic social surroundings, well, they don't feel safe. The world is threatening. And when the world is threatening, you see, the psyche and the brain go into a fight-or-flight state. They resort to using more primitive brain circuitry. We call this the reptilian brain, to deal with adversity. When empathy breaks down or is absent, the systems that help us comfort and regulate ourselves to master stress, well, they all become overwhelmed. The result is what we call trauma. Now, we usually think of trauma as what happens when a big, horrible thing happens, you know, like when a military convoy gets hit with an IED, or there's an earthquake, or one or both of our parents are physically violent and/or abusive. But the psychological feelings of danger that are at the heart of trauma are more often due to subtler failures of empathy. Evidence of early trauma due to the breakdown of empathy can be seen in experiments conducted in the late 70s, in which mothers were filmed playing with their babies, you know, both parties enjoying the ordinary mirroring of gesture and expression so typical of those early days. The mothers were then instructed to make their faces flat, still, and unresponsive to their babies for 3 minutes. Well, the babies quickly became agitated, confused, and desperate. They broke down, expressing rage and protest and grief. Eventually, these babies gave up and turned away from their mothers, sad and hopeless. However temporarily, this qualified as trauma. Now imagine a parent chronically unable to properly mirror a child's gestures and feelings. Multiply this above example 1,000 times. The trauma that results is usually profound. Among other things, when empathy breaks down, the developing child doesn't learn how to manage stress, how to soothe him or herself. And various disturbances are then often seen. For example, these infants might grow up to become teenagers and adults who depend on drugs or alcohol to calm down. They may become hyperactive. They may even shut down and numb themselves, having great difficulty empathizing with others, including their own kids. We could say then that proper mirroring, proper empathy, goes into the development of a healthy stress response system. No empathy? Well, more difficulty managing stress. But here's another important takeaway from the studies of empathy and stress. While in the beginning, this system depends entirely on the child's most intimate caretakers, the need for mirroring and recognition never goes away. Empathy continues to be a vital nutrient throughout the life cycle. And this shouldn't be a newsflash to anybody. I mean, right? The need to be understood, to have someone empathize with us while recognizing the ways we're special, is universal. And we can all easily see it in ourselves and others. Empathy is like food for the soul. Unfortunately, too often in our society, people are isolated and deprived of this nourishment. Household size, for instance, has shrunk. The average number of confidants that people have has sharply decreased over the last few decades, with a full quarter of Americans reporting that they have no confidants at all. Time spent socializing with friends or having family dinners has similarly declined. The last 5 decades has witnessed stunning declines in virtually every form of social and civic participation. You know, spaces where people can encounter each other face-to-face in their communities, including church-going events and social clubs, the PTA, and even, according to sociologist Robert Putnam, bowling leagues. The number of hours that children spend playing outside in unstructured activities, which we think are necessary for the development of social skills and empathy, well, this was reduced by 50% between 81 and 97, a loss compensated for by radical increases in time spent watching television or sitting in front of computer screens. On average, American kids watch 2 to 4 hours of television daily, and if you add in the time spent in front of computer screens, well, this is even greater. The time spent is even greater. And consider this, 43% of children under 2 years old watch TV or videos every day. Children need face-to-face human interaction, and digital substitutes just won't do. On nearly all measures of social life, Americans tend to have fewer and lower quality interactions with one another than their parents or grandparents did. Furthermore, isolation has grown along with inequality. They go together. It turns out, not surprisingly, that societies with more economic fairness and equality are societies that encourage and privilege cooperation and mutuality. Societies like ours that are so exceptionally unequal encourage and privilege aggression, paranoia, and competitiveness, traits associated with the so-called rugged individualist. While sometimes adaptive, such an ideal also makes a virtue out of disconnection and trauma. Empathy is under siege in our society. It needs to be supported and strengthened. Understanding the powerful value of empathy and the risks of its absence should make us more supportive of families, encourage more play, fight against inequality, and build communities that embed our individualism in a much richer and more empathic social world.
Thanks for listening to Mysteries of the Mind podcast. To learn more about how your unconscious mind really works, please tune in next time, and be sure to visit Dr. Bader's website at michaelbader.com.